Fuel goes live in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to our new podcast, In the Hunt, powered by GameForge.
Welcome to this episode of In the Hunt Live. This is Brian Bailey here in Charlottesville, Virginia. We have Mark Sweeney with us and also special guest Gareth McShay from Ireland. Gentlemen, how are you guys doing?
Doing lovely. How you doing, Gareth?
Doing great, guys. Greetings from Dublin. It's another beautiful, gray, misty summer's day. We're slowly emerging from the slumber that COVID inflicted upon us, and it's kind of fascinating to watch this. I think social psychologists are going to have a field day, not just what happened during COVID, but what's going to happen afterwards. But golf courses are open. We're back. I'm back coaching, which is great. I'm enjoying that. And next step is hospitality. I'm going to see in about a fortnight. So hopefully we'll have a decent summer.
For those of you who don't know what a fortnight is, that's 2 weeks, right?
That is 2 weeks in any money. Yep.
I thought that was the game that kids play when they shoot a bunch of people.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay. Well, it's definitely not that.
Very good. I want to apologize that it's taken so long for us to get back online. We were supposed to do this Mark was actually in Charlottesville a couple weeks ago. We had a death in the family via pet. And it was happening when Mark and I were actually supposed to go live. So needless to say, that did not happen. So that was on me and the ill-timed death of our family guinea pig. But in the meantime, the beauty of it is this topic came up really from a presentation that I was doing a couple nights ago. I've been a collegiate coach, or I was a collegiate coach for close to 20 years. And the running joke collegiately is always a bogey sticks. Why does the bogey stick collegiately, right? And so if you know, inside of women's golf, especially, that's where I was, even on the men's side, when a collegiate player makes a bogey, it just doesn't come off the scoreboard very often. So you don't see rounds where people are making four or five bogeys and making five or six birdies. So, you know, kind of the running joke inside the collegiate world was anytime that a player makes a bogey, it sticks. And it really hit me the other night when I was presenting why that was. So we'll kind of expand on that. But Mark, have you heard that comment from other coaches and even junior coaches and hopefully not tour coaches, but where bogeys just don't leave the scorecard or the scoreboard?
No, I've only heard it from you, believe it or not. The first time I ever heard it was like 2 weeks ago.
No which way. I thought,
yeah. I've actually never heard that before, but it makes a ton of sense, especially when we go back and look at the data on it. It makes even more sense. But because I was never a college coach, even though I teach a lot of college kids, I never really appreciated how, you know, damaging those bogeys are in terms of once they're kind of there.
And how about you, Gareth, with teaching all kind of players over there in Ireland, that do players ever talk about, man, I just can't get bogeys to come off my scorecard?
No, not that terminology anyway, Brian. It's not something that I've heard. I think you've just created something a couple of weeks back. And
I'm taking full credit. All right, look, we're gonna wait. Retake. I created this new term inside of golf.
Hey, you get credit for it at least.
You know, I'll back up what Mark said. When we've looked at it, yep, it makes sense. But I guess we're just thinking about things slightly differently, and you've given us a different perspective. So thanks for that, Brian.
Oh, no problem. I'm taking full credit for all of this. All the college coaches that I know, you get no credit. It's all me. I'm flag in the ground. It's mine. I own it now. So this is probably the one graph that probably got Mark and I thinking most inside of GameForge. This was the basically showing you score relative to par when things happen. Mark, this is your baby. You want to talk on this one?
Fuel Live has experienced a temporary technical issue. We will get back to live streaming in a moment. We apologize.
So Gareth, I know Mark and I we're fortunate. We play with we coach really, really good players. You coach a wider array of talent. What do you kind of see inside of your coaching on where birdies happen, doubles, and how you can kind of help a player maybe erase some bogeys from a system?
Brian, can I just compliment you there in your description? It was absolutely beautiful. A wider array of talent. truly poetic.
More diverse.
I think there's a couple of things you've said there, which I believe are truly important. And that is, one, you have to know where to train. And as you're saying there, if you're training to try and make birdies to take bogeys off your card, and we now know that it's noise doing all the damage, and you're training the wrong things. And I would certainly see the player who's getting close to, if not already, starting to break 80, you know, late 70s, low 80s. They're always talking about if I can make a couple more birdies a run. But what we know now is that's not going to be the answer at all. To for them, I guess the holy grail will be get under 75. They've got to start cleaning other stuff up. Tee shots tend to be, you know, particularly troublesome when we see noise appearing. People not getting the ball in play cleanly, and the other stuff, I guess, I see a lot because I do a lot of on-course coaching and help people a lot with mental performance. It just really, you know, some players' ability to compound an error is quite simply sensational, but not in a good way. They make a mistake, and rather than minimizing the error and trying to recover from it as best can, they push to try and recover a good score in the hole in their mind, being a par, and that turns an easy bogey into an even easier 6 or 7.
How about yourself, Mark? I know you've had as much great conversations with players about their ability to create birdie or not being able to create birdie. What is some insight for you?
Yeah, when I have conversations with players, they're always usually complaining about not making enough putts, which is really more along the lines of generating birdies or maybe par saves. But, you know, but unless you're breaking 80, your doubles is the problem. Birdies is not the problem. Doubles is a much bigger problem than bogeys is. And so, as Garrett said, those are 70, 75% tee shot issues, OBE, compounding errors, duffing chips, you know, things like that. And we all know you can shoot in the 70s without making any birdies whatsoever. You know, we've probably all done it. We've all seen people who have done it, where you can go out and just make 3 or 4 bogeys and you're shooting in the 70s, you know, no doubles and no birdies at all. So I think people do put too much of an emphasis on birdies until they get to that kind of very low 70s or sub 70 level, high level competitive golfers.
No, and this chart again shows you the elite player, which is someone that's going to be shooting single digits, pretty low, par, couple over. That's the only time you really start to see where birdies and bogeys cross. So assuming you take noise out of the system, this is your first real potential of making, on average, making enough birdies to really change a scorecard. So again, you know, this gives, I think, great perspective for a lot of coaches and a lot of players. Where do I need to spend my training, and what should this, you know, what should I really emphasize inside of training? This is probably the chart that I think really hit home a lot of that too, is kind of by level. Where should I actually be spending my time, right? So, you know, as a tour player, that's the only time where your offense actually overtakes the noise and kind of defense together. So as a tour player, you better be training for birdie. And if you're not training for birdie, you're not going to be a tour player very long.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes. And I think that's right.
And I think that's where some systems have led some players astray, is the fact that if you're playing professionally, you're playing on a tour, you've got to learn to make birdie. And again, you know, this pie chart shows you that. But the elite player, which is your average collegian, and that's kind of where this, you know, my new terminology came up with, was this is the time, you know, at the defense is really unable to be taken off the board because the offense spends the majority of its time attacking noise. And again, that concept of an advanced player, again, kind of collegiate player, they hang out in the advanced and elite stage, is, you know, all your capital is being wasted. And then again, defense just kind of sits there and just, you know, like I said, once it's on the board, it just never comes off.
Yeah, I love these pie charts. I love these pie charts. And you're right. Like even shooting low 70s, you still have more bogeys than birdies.
Yep.
You know, you still gotta get those out of the system.
And then, like you said, as you're working all the way through the system, if you're in a developing player, someone that's just starting to break 90, look at your birdie options. It ain't there. So, you know, coming up with an offensive game plan, or if you're listening to a coach, or if you're sitting down reading golf magazines or watching, you know, golf craziness on the internet, understanding your ability to make birdie doesn't really happen. So you're following false prophets as an emerging and developing, even a proficient player, if your coach or your game plan is, I'm just going to do it with birdies. What do you think, Gareth? You like false prophets?
No, I don't like that. I don't like shiny, bright objects. I prefer facts, particularly if I'm going to be devoting energy into a project and attempting to maybe become slightly better at something. Brian, something I've seen a bit as players get better towards that collegiate level, they make a couple of bogeys and then their decision-making gets hijacked and they start doing some pretty dumb things to try and make those birdies that we already know aren't going to probably save them. And that's when we see the compounding of errors and they take a driver off a tee box and they really shouldn't be hitting driver. And then that noise kicks in and a lot of that isn't to do with technical proficiency. Some of that is just understanding you're going to make some bogeys, but you don't want to compound those and turn it into a run of five or six bad holes in a row.
Yeah, and like I said, collegiately, they're very gifted at running five or six bogeys in a row, just not even thinking about it. Lived it, sat there, watched it for 20 years, and it's a hard lifestyle.
Yeah, there's a big gap between that and going on tour. You're not going to be on tour very long if you're doing that, right?
No, I think there's the major separator, and I know Mark and I have talked about this in the past, is we've had a lot of pushback from collegians that are getting ready to, you know, play at a good Division I school, maybe, you know, Power Five conference, team has success, and they think they're going to leave the university and just immediately go on tour and think they'll dominate. But when you look at these pie charts, if they're kind of hanging out in these two pie charts, it doesn't mirror the tour pie chart. So again, there's some big steps there, and we've had major pushback from a couple athletes just saying, you know, I don't believe you. I don't think this happens. And the one thing I can guarantee is that there's not a single one of those pushbacks I know that I watch on Sundays.
On network TV.
On network TV.
Yeah, that's right. You're not watching them on Thursday either.
Yeah, we might be catching them on a Tuesday and a mini tour event in, you know, Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
Yeah, I it's difficult is when you get a player who just doesn't buy into the difference between, you know, high level amateur golf and pro golf. And there's quite a few out there who just say, no, I'm playing well. It's all good. Just keep doing what I'm doing. And there is a gap. And we've talked about this endlessly, the gap between amateur golf and tour golf. Even with all the numbers and Gareth, as you said, with all the stats out there and not just, you know, guessing at this stuff, we know very, very clearly what it takes to compete at those levels. We still get pushback, maybe from the players, maybe from parents. I've had parental pushback on it. What do y'all do about that, if anything?
I love those three top pie charts, Mark, because even if you can't understand numbers or you refuse to acknowledge they're true, just look at the different colors, would you please? And tell me, you know, do you like the big blue one? Do you like the big orange one? Do you like the green one? The step up there from elite to tour, it's really striking when you see it in those charts. But
it's massive. Huge. The orange, the difference into orange is massive.
Almost half, isn't it?
Yep.
You know, tell me your plan for currently, if you're making four or five bogeys around, how are you going to get that down to half and at the same time get your birdies up?
Right.
That is, you better have a really good plan.
Well, and if you notice from advanced to elite, so if you notice from, you know, low 80s to mid 70s, the bogeys are not that different.
No.
You know, and then they just go, they drop almost in half by tour level.
Yeah, it's
incredible. Yeah, and I think, again, to me, the fascinating part, again, the emerging player, the defense, the proficient, even the advanced player, you're roughly making the same kind of bogeys. Like, it's relatively similar. You know, you're making anywhere from, you know, five to seven bogeys. So even a player shooting in the 90s is only making a handful. Now they're making more noise and things like that. But kind of at your core, they're making roughly the same amount of bogeys. So, again, it's really fascinating, you know, for coaches and kind of people getting in the system. And my son is one that, you know, we're trying to figure out how to get noise out of the system. You know, our big goal now is, can we get to the green? He's an emerging player pushing develop. Can we get to the green fast enough to give ourselves a par putt? If you give yourself a par putt, you're going to walk away with pars, worst case bogeys, right? And that's really, for an emerging player, that's a goal. Can I give myself an opportunity to make par? I'll make a couple, but I probably won't make many doubles. And again, that concept is, you know, from what I've heard from a lot of junior coaches that I've had the good fortune to watch and listen to, is that might not be the message being, you know, if your junior coach at 90s talking about birdies, you're probably barking up the wrong tree.
Yeah. You know, you asked about the, what do you say to a player who's going, well, I'm playing great, I'm going to go on tour. You can talk to those who are open-minded and willing to look at this data objectively, and you have to be objective. And if you can't look at that as a player and go, wow, I got some work to do, you're not being objective, you're being deluded. And you can't work with the deluded. You just can't help them. So it's very important. If they can't take that on the nose and go, wow, this is really eye-opening, they're not going to be on tour.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I mean, you do your best and then you just move on after that is what I've kind of learned.
Yeah. And the best collegians are really, you know, they're going to hang out in that elite, maybe kind of in between elite and tour, but even, you know, an all American collegiately, they've got that big gap, and the big gap really is birdies. You know, you don't see collegiately 4 birdies very often on average. And then that's kind of what your goal is on tour. And now you're talking more difficult setups. You're talking longer golf courses. You know, everything changes.
Pins.
Everything changes, you know. People with cleats walking by, making lots of noise, like all these things change.
What happened, Brian? I'd roll my eyes to heaven if somebody did that to me.
but that concept is, it's starting to figure out how to make birdie. And you know, if you've listened to this podcast in the past or watched any of our fuel videos, you know the recipe for birdie. It's simple. You know, how many greens do I hit? How close, how many times do I hit within 20 feet? And what is my conversion rate? Like the recipe is simple. Creating that is a much more of a challenge as a player, you know, giving yourself those opportunities. But again, that concept of is I got to start learning to make birdies. And I think it ties in, and I'll let Mark talk on this a little bit for actual targeting strategies from his presentations a couple nights ago about how to actually, you know, maybe what you're targeting as an elite player, maybe the big part is there's a targeting component that doesn't allow you to have the opportunities. So kind of a segue into that, Mark, what about your dispersion talk from the other day and what we kind of gasped at where to really target?
Well, what I was interested, just first of all, the visual of how much tighter the dispersion is for a tour player than a high level amateur shooting low 70s, breaking 70, the dispersion patterns aren't even close. You know, if you put them side by side, it's like, wow, they're still not even close. But it also surprised me how often it, you know, the simulation said pretty much go straight the pin. If you're 150 and in and there's no hazard, meaning no water or anything, go pretty close to straight at it. Or for tour players, it was straight at it a lot. By the time you get to 200 yards, it's basically saying go for the middle of the green at that point. Or if there's water by the pin, you know, play well away from the water, which we've seen a lot of problems with that. But in the absence of water or having a very long approach, you know, the optimal target was very often within 1 or 2 yards of the pin itself, which we don't see a whole lot of people doing.
No. And again, that concept, and I actually challenged a couple of my players that I work with. Now I'm a putting and short game coach, so of course I'm targeting pins always. But again, I challenged a couple of them with ball striking on the fact of, you know, you've got to make sure that, you know, unless there's a hazard involved, you got to be more aggressive than you think. And I think a lot of that big step from a collegian to that tour mentality is, you know, having the fortitude to really fire at stuff when need be.
Brian, as a short game coach, of course, you love dispersion.
That's what I do. That's why I have. That's why I'm employed.
It's interesting.
more things we can work on.
You live for missed greens and missed putts.
I do, but they don't stay on tour very long. If they do that, as brilliant as I can be, they don't. They won't stick very long.
I would almost see an interesting transition here, whereby higher handicap, particularly male golfers, I might as well just call this, will stand with a 3-wood in their hands at 210 yards, and they can probably pitch the thing 185 to begin with. It's possibly over water, and they're just going to go straight at that pin that's hanging off the left edge of a green by a thread. And then as people progress through the game, sometimes I notice that they get a little bit more cautious. They're almost protecting scores as they get into that advanced to elite level and not knowing what they need to take on. And then the other thing is when they're training, they don't know how to train. They just simply don't know how to train to get better at what they need to get better at to reduce those scores and get up to the next level.
No, well, I agree there.
an example that we saw at the PGA last weekend was, you know, the 17th is 240 over water with a fairly small green. And, you know, what did Phil do correctly? He played as far as humanly possible away from water as he could, blew it over the back left, almost into the crap, say par from there. But there was no possibility whatsoever of that ball going in the water, like zero. He's going to have to save par from the fescue before he's going to have to, you know, take a drop.
Yeah, and worst case is bogey, right? Worst case, if he doesn't get it up and down from back there, he makes bogey. Best case, if he blows it in the water, he's probably going to make double.
And yeah, again, best case is bogey. Standard case is double.
Yep. So that concept of, again, that's the better athlete, the smarter athlete on the golf course, knowing when it's right and when it's not. And, you know, other than, you know, for a tour player, though, you know, other than that hazard component, there's guys and ladies, they're firing at a lot more flag sticks than you probably think.
Yeah, even with the tighter pins, even being 3 and 4 steps off the fringe, they're still, if they're 150 and in, they're going pretty close to right at it, if not right at it.
Yeah, and this is just a calculator we've shown in the past. This is in positions, so how many shots you hit within 20 feet. We kind of talked about that concept of what does it take to make a birdie. And then we have a kind of a comprehensive or a compound matrix we call BIP, which are your birdies to in positions. So what total birdies made in relationship to in positions. So this number basically just kind of shows you when you had opportunities, what did it look like conversion rate wise. And kind of what's fascinating with this is I actually banded them so that the tour player averages close to 8 in positions. The elite player, it's kind of funny, averages 7. The advanced player averages 6. The proficient player is averaging 5. So mind blowing the fact that it kind of, you know, kind of steps down that way. So again, if you think about it, if you're a proficient player, which is someone shooting mid to low 80s, you're only going to have 5 birdie putts inside of 20 feet per round on average. Right. So,
and where do they convert at?
And they convert at about 30%. So if you look, you average
1.5 birdies.
You average about 1.5 birdies. The tour player averages roughly 8 opportunities and they convert roughly a little over 55% BIP, which gives them their 4 birdie number. And then again, an elite player, they're converting in the 40s. So with their opportunities, they're pushing 3 birdies. So it really goes 4-3-2-1.5-1. So again, yeah. that concept of, you know, you're not going to be able to take bogeys out of the system as a proficient player or an advanced player, even elite player. You just don't make enough birdies. The tour player kind of does that at over 4 birdies, but it's just an interesting concept of showing, like, what are my opportunities on what are my conversion rates? And it goes back to what Mark said earlier. I'm a player. I don't make enough putts. Well, what are your expectations and what are the standards you're really at your level? What should you be converting? And I think a lot of people have that misconception. I worked with a junior golfer a couple days ago, going to play collegiate golf. He told me inside of 8 feet, I was like, how many birdie putts should you make from here? And he goes, we dropped 10 balls. He looked, he goes, I should probably make 9, maybe all of them. I said, I hope so. And I want to be your agent because we're going to make a whole lot of money in the future if you average 90 to 100% inside of 8 feet. So I think that understanding of standards and expectations is just, for a lot of people, is off. And they think, again, that they can create something that is just not attainable.
And Brian, it should be said that the rules do apply to everybody, right?
They do. I know we're in a postmodern world right now, and you can create your own truths. But I'm going to tell you right now, if you want to break 70, you better make a whole lot of birdies. All right, so. One other calculator we came up with, and this kind of gives you a good concept. Let me share this. Whoops. Share screen. I don't know, Mark, do you remember when we created this thing a while back?
This was the original calculator we did.
This was just for short game where we kind of rated as an A day, B day, C day. And so basically the A player is tour level, B player is kind of the elite player, C is kind of the proficient player. So what we can do here is say, let's say I just had a round of golf and let's say I'm a, you know, a C player, an advanced player. I hit 10 greens today. I hear this a lot. I hit 10 greens. I should have scored much better. So that gives me 8 opportunities that I have to save par, where I have to scramble. So let's say I scramble at 50%. So I make 4. And let's say I had 3 of them P6 and I converted. We'll say we converted all 3 of those. So what does that really mean? So even though I hit 10 greens and I got up and down 50% of the time, which is really pushing a good tour player, you know, you're just right behind what they're doing, I still made 4 bogeys. And as a proficient player, now I have, you know, now I have 10 greens, and we know a proficient player is going to average roughly 5 in positions. So really I have to convert about 90% of my in positions to be able to shoot even par.
Which is not going to happen.
Which is not going to happen on average.
Ever, ever.
ever.
What is the average there, bud?
Do what?
What is the average conversion for that proficient player? Just to give people
an idea. A proficient player, short, like I said, their BIP rate or their actual
maybe 30, position 20 to 30. To
5. So, and they convert roughly 30%.
20 to 30, yeah.
It could be as much as they'd have to perform 2.5 times better than their average, which is not going to happen. So this is kind of that concept we've talked about, you know, as a minimum, if you can hit 12 greens, and of that, if you can scramble 50% of the time, you know, that gives you your chance to be able to save par or shoot par, because that would give you, you know, 12 bird or 12 greens, and 6 of those hopefully would be in positions. You'd make roughly half of those, give or take. That'd give you 3 birdies, 3 bogeys. But again, that concept I think a lot of people don't understand is when you miss a green, the odds are you're giving away a half a shot or more, depending on where you are inside of the, you know, the pantheon in golf. So, you know, if you think about it, you know, just in the simplest form, every time I miss a green in regulation, I at minimum lose half a shot. So how important is a green? And I think this is a factor that a lot of juniors, even a lot of collegians, don't really grasp on how important a green is.
Right. And every time you hit a green, you're gaining at best probably a third of a shot. Mm-hmm. At best, a third of a shot, between a tenth and a third. Right. So if you're a tour player and you're hitting a green, you're gaining a third of a shot or a fourth of a shot, but you're losing a half when you miss. So missing greens obviously goes backwards faster than hitting greens goes forward.
Very much so.
And well, you got to hit about 12 greens to shoot par because it's about 2/3 ratio, right?
That's right. There we go.
Yeah, that math works.
It's funny, math.
Maths.
Maths. but like I said, this calculator just gives you a good sense or an understanding, and if, you know, if this is something you guys would want to see in GameForge, we could definitely code this in or create. I know in the past we've done some consulting work where we gave report cards on different stuff. But this concept, again, is you've got to understand what's good and what's not. You've got to understand that if I only hit 9 greens, I know I'm going to probably give away anywhere from 5 to 6 shots, depending on where I am in the level. You know, so again, that concept of how important it is to hit greens. I even have tour coaches when they're like, well, tour player X shot so-and-so, but they hit 10 greens and they should have done better. And I'm like, well, maybe they should have shot a shot better. But on average, they shouldn't have shot a whole lot better than what they did. So again, that concept, and like I said, as a putting coach, I love this. I can push this all off on the full swing coaches and say, you're just not getting your job done full swing wise. Like, you know, if you're not hitting X amount of shots on the green and you're not hitting X amount of shots inside of 20 feet, really what I do is just, it's not that important.
And that's what the full swing coach says about you also.
Yeah. Well, my wife even says I'm not that important.
You just make stuff up and then say it was your own.
I'll steal it later. I learned that in the golf industry.
I think the important thing here too as well is sometimes a player will go out and have one of those crazy rounds where they hit 4 greens in regulation, make 3 birdies and somehow scramble a life out of it. Maybe get a round 2 under par. And therefore, they convince themselves if they keep training their short game, that's going to be more of a regular occurrence. That's a single time event or maybe a once a year event. That's not something you can rely on to be a proficient player.
No, very much so. And outlier. It's the outlier round. And the outlier is used all the time in golf for good and bad. And a lot of players take that outlier as saying, that's my normal. No, it's not your normal. That's, you know, one in 100 rounds, you've actually done that. But again, I think that's where it goes back to understanding what you do. You've got to create some sort of data. You got to be able to track your performance. You know, we here really like Gameforge, just because we created it, not just because we're great. And it's one of the best platforms on earth. Once again, not because we created it, but again, it's one of the best platforms on earth. No.
The internet's about to go down again.
Oh, yeah. You just jinxed yourself again. Okay.
I mean, there's a lot of great programs out there that you could use. It's streaming much better now. but again, that concept of is if you're not tracking and you don't understand, then you're just guessing and you're reacting and you're taking, then that outlier really has a power over you. Oh yeah. I remember that one day last year when X, and again, that's, you know, the brain is really good at remembering what it wants to remember.
Yeah, Brian, we've seen this in another area, which I think all of us can relate to it in some way, make, shape, or form, which is weight loss or indeed weight gain, where, you know, I'll lose a few pounds, but I won't weigh myself or I won't take any measurements. And I can't believe it. 3 months later, I'm actually a little bit bigger and my clothes are a bit tighter, even though I've been doing what I thought I needed to do to lose weight. So if you're not prepared to measure, you're basically saying you don't care and you're not going to get any better. And any training you do, you're just wasting time.
No, I agree. You got to train with a purpose, and if you don't have a way to understand what that purpose is, then you're just guessing, and then you're just, you know, and then you're just acting like about 95% of all other golfers in the world.
Well, wouldn't you say the frustrating thing for us guys, now that we understand this stuff ever more deeply, we see the pathways now, and the pathways are very clear. If you want to become a player who breaks 85 for the first time, we can show you how you need to go and get that done. We can show you how to break 80. We can show you how to break 75. Should you say this is something you want to achieve?
No, the pathways are there. For all Gameforge members, if you go into Fuel, sign in with your Gameforge membership, we have tons of free information on the Forging Player Series that really document what we're talking about, what's important, when, and why. And again, that'll help you with your training, start to understand those concepts of I'm at this level, I need to work on X. I'm a proficient player. These are the most important things for me to get better. And I'm going to tell you right now, as a proficient player, we're not going to be talking birdies.
No.
No.
No, go do a bogey assessment and a double assessment. Start from there.
Very much so. And then maybe a couple three-putt assessments, because you tend to, even though you hit the green, you tend not to be very close, so you put a lot of pressure on the putter that way. But again, those concepts, if you understand that, you have a really good way of understanding where you need to train and how that next level looks and how to get there. And, you know, I'm a big believer. If you know how to get there, the map is in front of you and you're willing to follow it, it's amazing you'll actually show up there.
Potentially. You won't be going the wrong way, at least. Break down.
I was totally letting you pick that one up, Mark, because I had no idea what to do with it.
I saw the blank look on your face there, Gareth. Let me jump in on this.
The map is not the territory. Okay.
Fair enough.
The menu is not the meal. Okay, here comes Brian.
Okay, here we go. Gareth is not invited back ever.
The problem is it's 9 o'clock there and it's 3 o'clock here.
He's been drinking and we haven't yet. That's just completely not fair.
Water.
We just need to start earlier, I think.
I think that's what it is. So as we kind of wrap this up, is there any great insight you guys have from the actual PGA? I thought that was a really good win. Actually seeing crowds without masks and lots of them, which was exciting.
Yeah, I like the crowds. My call was that nobody who averaged under 300 yards off the tee was going to win. And Phil was 301, so he didn't prove me wrong there. But, boy, nobody would have picked him to win, like, ever.
Nah, that golf course was a beast. They set total that beast thing up so long.
It was a great week for the two of the Irish guys, Shane Lowry and Padraig had a fabulous run at it. And I think Shane may well reflect on that golf tournament and say, hey, you know what, I had a real good chance to win it because he putted real bad for the majority of the event. I don't think it helped that he was paired with DJ, and DJ was missing things comfortably as well. So the two of them got into a little run of missed putts. That can happen, right? But Harrington, isn't he just amazing?
Yeah, he had a great week.
I don't know where up he comes, and he's just fun. He's smiling on the golf course. Brilliant week to watch. What a golf course. Asks lots of wonderful questions, and a few of the players came up with some good answers.
So we'll go ahead and shut this down. I know we've had some internet issues, so I'll be interested to see what actually captured and what did not.
Yeah.
And I will piece something together to the best of my ability. And there might be a voiceover for Gareth to make him sound more intelligent, but we'll see.
Oh.
Well, you can subtitle me with the Irish accent.
Right. Jesus. You're writing anything you want in the subtitles.
That's right. So any closing thoughts before we shut this live feed down?
No, it was good. You know, I think as a coach, as a player, you need to study those pie charts and understand those pie charts and understand where to put your energy.
Yeah, first of all, I'm truly blessed to share this platform with you, Brian. But apart from that, I think what Mark has said is on the money. And here's the most important thing. You've got to accept that those charts, they do apply to you. Even though you're telling yourself, no, maybe I can do it in a different way. There is no different way. That is the way. That is the light. So you've got to just, if you can figure out where you're starting from, take it on the chin, you're already making progress because now you can see the next level, the next step.
No, I agree. And for those that are not part of GameForge, you might want to take a look at it. And again, go look at the Forging Player Series, try to get that information as a coach or a player. Where am I? Understand what's expected and then what's my path forward. So I want to wish you all luck on your journey inside the golf world. Congratulations, Phil Mickelson, for all of us old guys that now we think we can go out there and bust it 301 on average, which that won't happen. I don't even think I did that when I was 30. But again, that concept of Phil, and I think that the epic picture of the gallery surrounding him walking up 18.
That was cool to watch.
That made me think of the Arnies, the Hogans, back in the day when there was really no crowd control.
Yeah, chaos. Back to chaos.
So thank you all, and we look forward to bringing you more information in the future.
Thank you.
This has been a Fuel production.